This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
In a place where you get to hear all 4 hours of this radio program, lucky you. You know that, by the way, if you're not, you should write to your local station and tell them that they should carry all 4 hours. But you can always catch up on the podcast. Just search The Other Side of Midnight on any podcast app, or just go to redapplepodcastnetwork.com and search The Other Side of Midnight. Now, if you have heard the last 2 hours, you know, so far we have discussed mass shootings and the parents that may or may not be responsible for them, race and racism, the war in the Middle East, aliens, and what else do we talk about? A wide variety of subjects that are controversial, including whether bridges collapsing. So what can we add to this simmering festival of controversial subjects? I know. How about a little religion? Okay. Now, I want to preface this discussion by saying a couple things. One, I am not a theologian by any stretch. Two, I do not speak for anybody's religious beliefs other than my own. Number three, and I've made this point before, a lot of times when people call to ask me a question about something, particularly in that Ask Frank Anything hour that we do at the end of the week, I'm kind of reacting based on thinking about a complicated question for 10 seconds. And sometimes if I would think more about a subject, I would have a better expressed or more nuanced view. Sometimes it's easy, right? Sometimes somebody will ask me, how do you get on the ballot for governor in New York? I know that if you wake me up in the middle of a dead sleep, I can tell you how to do that. Sometimes there's a question I need a little bit more, that I'd like to put a little more thought into. Who's your favorite Met at every position? I'd like to give that a little more thought than I did in the most recent show. But anyway, couple of weeks ago, someone called in and asked what 3 questions I would ask God if I got to interview God. And I thought I came up, based on reacting within seconds, I thought I came up with some pretty good questions. One of the questions that I said was I mentioned that I would ask God about his changing views. And I explained that, clearly there was a change from the New Testament to the Old Testament in terms of God was much more violent in the Old Testament. You had the flood, you had the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, you had the plagues on Egypt, you had a whole bunch of other instances of divine retribution, which we're not seeing in the New Testament, and we don't really see to the present day. You know, we're not seeing floods that kill off every living creature except for Noah, his family, and some animals. So my question for him is why? What changed in you? Why did you mature to a more violent position? That would be one of my questions. So anyway, that's the context in which I was I received this email. This email is from a devoted listener, listens all the time, and a great person. And this person writes, since Friday, March 29th, something has been bothering me. A caller asked you how you would interview God. You said you would want to discuss with God the difference between the God of the Old Testament and the God of the New Testament. You said, quote, who knows how many of the stories in the Old Testament are true? You said the God that was hanging around the Old Testament was very different from the God who was hanging around the New Testament. You wondered if God had matured a little bit and learned some lessons. When you asked, quote, who knows how many of the stories in the New Testament are literally true? I wonder if you ever considered that same question about the New Testament. Let's face it, all religion is based on blind faith. So isn't it just as likely that the stories in the New Testament may also not be literally true? Answer. So, and by the way, there's more of this email, and I will delve into a little bit more of this email in a moment. But answer is yes. Absolutely. I do not accept all of the New Testament as being set in stone and as the literal truth. I think the Gospels, Mark, Matthew, Luke, and John, are very close to the literal truth. And the reason I wish I had more time to think about the question before I answered it and do a better job explaining my view, I wouldn't have given such a ham-handed answer. But the reason I've always felt, and this is not a Christian belief, this is a Frank Morano belief, I put a lot of faith in the Gospels, not necessarily even the other books of the New Testament. For instance, I'm not a huge proponent of the Apostle Paul, for instance, but we'll leave that aside. But I do put a lot of faith in what's in Mark, Matthew, Luke, and John. And I've always believed, speaking just for me, that what is in those Gospels is pretty close to the actual Word of God. And I believe that because the people that wrote them, Mark, Matthew, Luke, and John, were alive when Jesus lived. And they heard Jesus saying those things. Now, there's one book that's a little bit different than from the other three. And I think there's, you know, that's worth exploring. But those books were not written while Jesus was alive. But the writers who wrote them were written while Jesus was alive. The books of the Old Testament, some of them like Job, we don't know when they were written. But Genesis was written 1,000, they estimate, probably around the year 1400 BC, maybe even 1445 BC. So sometime between 1400 BC and 1445 BC. So you ask, Genesis was written, let's say, 1400 BC. What events is it depicting? Well, scholars believe that the creation was 4004 BC. The flood was 2348 BC. The Tower of Babel, 2246 BC. Moses and Exodus, 1491 BC. So you have Genesis, Exodus, and Leviticus, most of the other early Old Testament books written around 1400 BC. So they're written between 2500 and 3000 years after the events that they describe. So I do put a lot more faith as a literary source and as a theological source in the New Testament than the Old Testament, just because those books were written more quickly or more recently or closer in time to the events that they depict. I mean, think about it in your own life. If you were to write about something that occurred 20 years ago or 30 years ago, would that be more accurate than if you were to write about something that happened 2,500 years ago or 3,000 years ago? Particularly when those events that you're writing about couldn't have been recorded by any means, not by audio, not by video, not by photo, not by, you know, not by writing, nothing. So now I realize that they say that God inspired Moses and Solomon and other writers that are, you know, credited with writing a lot of those Old Testament books. And God kind of showed them the way, and God told them some of what was going on. And that's how these writers were able to write them. And I'm not questioning God as a muse, but I just think that's why I've always viewed the New Testament as the actual word of God and the Old Testament more as the inspired word of God, which is why I say, which is why I said I don't necessarily know how many of those stories are literally true. I think the Spirit is probably true in a lot of them, but I have no idea, honestly. And that's why I think if we're examining it as a literary source, which I guess in the context of that question I was, I question some of the accuracy of the events depicted as being literal truth. I think it's more likely that they're inspired truth. Additionally, when it comes to the Old Testament, there are so many similarities between the Old Testament stories and other ancient myths, the Sumerians, even the ancient Greeks. There are so many similarities between the flood, for instance, that Noah rescued two of each animal from, and other pre-biblical ancient myths. So, and even the fall of mankind that's depicted in Genesis, that's similar to a lot of other myths. Even, by the way, the story of Samson. If you look at the story of Samson and compare it to the story of Heracles, very similar, very similar. So it leads me to think that at least some of the stories in the Old Testament, not saying all of them, but at least some of the stories in the Old Testament are retelling of ancient myth, rather than a recording of what actually happened. Now, in some ways, maybe that makes sense. Maybe God was giving divine inspiration to the writers that recorded the Sumerian myths and the ancient Greek myths, as well as the Judeo-Christian myths, right? But so that's kind of why I don't give the Old Testament the same weight historically as I do the New Testament. But I certainly could have said it better. And if I had more time to think about it, I would have said it better. So that's that. Now, as far as the rest of this email here, and this is why I didn't want to throw this into the email section of yesterday's program, because I, you know, it's kind of a complicated answer and I wanted some time to explain it. In addition, I'm a little, this is what the emailer writes. In addition, I'm a little confused about the name God and the name Jesus. And I think most Jews might feel the same way as I do. When you talk about comparing the God in the Old Testament and the God in the New Testament, are you talking about comparing God and Jesus? So, if so, how can you make the comparison since Jesus didn't exist in the Old Testament? You would be comparing two completely different entities, wouldn't you? So, no, I'm comparing God the Father. So Christians, again, I'm not speaking for all Christians, but my understanding of Christianity is there's a belief in the Holy Trinity, and the Holy Trinity has sort of a God divided into a triumvirate. You have the Father, you have the Son, which is Jesus, and you have the Holy Spirit. And those three entities together make up God. So, no, when I'm comparing the God in the Old Testament to the God in the New Testament, I'm talking about God the Father and him not, you know, doing things like flooding everybody and destroying Sodom and Gomorrah and things of that nature. So that's pretty much where I am on that. And then she continues, or do Christians view Jesus in the New Testament as God? I guess I don't understand how Jesus can be God if he's actually the Son of God. It seems to me that in the New Testament, the focus is on Jesus, the Son of God, who's now suddenly considered to be God with no emphasis on God himself. That's always confused me, or am I incorrect? I know when Christian people pray, they often pray to Jesus, but I never understood why they don't pray to God, the original, who our creator. Well, look, again, I can't speak to how everybody prays, but when I pray, and I know when a lot of other Christians pray, they'll say a prayer that begins with in the name of the Father, and when I pray with my son at night, this is how we pray, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. You're praying not just exclusively to Jesus, you're praying to all the aspects of the Holy Trinity. And the Holy Trinity is very complicated, and look, who knows how accurate that is? I certainly don't. But St. Patrick, I think, used to compare a shamrock, a three-leaf clover, and explain how it was just as difficult to understand how a clover could continue, a three-leaf clover or a shamrock could exist without one part of it, as it is to explain the mystery of the Holy Trinity. But I have no idea, honestly. that, but yeah, another point, I want to make is that I'm sure you didn't want to appear insulting, but do you realize how disrespectful it sounded when you said that the Hebrew Bible may be fictional and that it's generally accepted that it's outdated? We don't believe it's outdated, not at all. There's a Jewish person who wrote this. We actually believe the Torah has lessons applicable to our everyday life. Well, I certainly think there's a lot of lessons in the Torah that are applicable to everyday life. How about thou shalt not kill? I think that's a great way to great place to start. And yet, you know, I think at, that's something that we seem to forget when it comes to deciding who to elect that will wage war all over the place. But yeah, so I hope I provided a little bit of additional context. But and if I didn't, so sorry, at least you know where my head is at when giving answers like that. But again, you got to understand, I'm kind of reacting to things as they come to me. So I made an effort to make some notes to at least explain where I'm coming from on that. You want to comment? You're welcome to do so. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. Speaking of ancient societies and religions, archaeologists in England have found a 3,000-year-old sacred site beneath the ruins of a medieval abbey. Isn't this neat? 3,000-year-old sacred site. Crowland on the English East Coast was home to a monastery dedicated to an 8th-century saint, Guthlac. And history, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, it goes to show you how little I know. I don't even know how Guthlac's name is pronounced. Histories of Guthlac's life said he had lived as a hermit on an ancient burial mound. Well, now, excavations of the monastery have found evidence of a huge late Stone Age or early Bronze Age henge, a circular earthwork which is used for ceremonial purposes, and it shows that the area was of sacred importance even before Christianity arrived in the region. Indeed, even before Christianity began. So this sacred site beneath the ruins of a medieval abbey was sacred 1,000 years even before Christianity. I think that is really interesting. Speaking of preservation and the importance of history, Aruba is doing something very interesting. Aruba, where my wife and I actually went on our honeymoon, and I can honestly say is a great place. And you know, I really think it's a place that you're guaranteed to have great weather, and a place that I recommend for those of you that are considering, you know, are considering some time to have a honeymoon or even just a nice vacation. It was recommended by our friends Joel and Bonnie. They go there a lot. But anyway, Aruba has backed up its entire national library to the Internet Archive. Now, the Internet Archive is an amazing thing, but this Caribbean island also uploaded documents from its national archives and other institutions, totaling 40,000 documents and 60,000 images. So since its launch in 2011, the Internet Archive has become a vital piece of Internet infrastructure, though this is the first time that the nonprofit has been used as a national repository. It stores old versions of websites, keeping a digital history which otherwise is lost in the rapid churn of the web. Aruba lacked the technical expertise or resources to digitize its records, which is a slow and technically demanding process. So the magazine Wired, which covers this kind of thing, they reported that the Internet Archive hopes the success of this collaboration will inspire other small nations to do the same. So I think this is a very positive development. Aruba's history is going to be preserved for potentially forever. Who knows? If alien archaeologists visit our planet 1,000 years from now, 2,000 years from now, they'll be able to find what Aruba was up to, which I think is certainly a good thing. All right, 800-848-9222. If you want to comment on anything we've covered, and we will do something interesting straight ahead. As soon as I figure it out, believe me, you will. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Hi, it's Ernie Anastas. You know, your thoughts can affect how you feel, and how you feel can impact your thoughts. Addressing your mind and body connection is the key to improving your overall wellness. Bergen Newbridge Medical Center is the largest hospital in New Jersey, providing comprehensive, equitable, compassionate, and high-quality emergency inpatient and outpatient medical care, plus mental health services and substance use disorder treatment. The Bergen Newbridge team can address your total health needs in one convenient location. Call 201-225-7130. For an appointment or newbridgehealth.org.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. So today is the birthday of my friend Michael Strasberg. Great guy, and has really just a wonderful wife and family. I used to work with him in Councilman Borelli's office. And Michael Strasberg, I asked him what music he wanted to play today. And he said, I would like a collection of all the musicians that asked the Trump campaign not to play their music. Which I think is hysterical. I don't know if it's a pro-Trump point that he's trying to make or an anti-Trump point, but I don't care. I think that's such, as far as a musical theme goes, that's brilliant. So happy birthday, Michael Strasberg. And clearly that that particular song is one that fits that description of being exactly that. All right. Hey, a couple of things. One, so I got an SMS text message from someone I know who writes, I have an emergency. Can you or someone there please Cash App me $41? I lost my debit card for Bank of America and only have Cash App debit. I need to get home from someplace. I'll pay you back tomorrow. Now, this is someone I would certainly give the money to, but my concern here is that this might not be the person. So I asked them to leave me a voice memo so that I know it's them and hear their voice. Although, honestly, in this day and age, you never know, even with AI, if someone's impersonating that. Now, that's a lot of effort to go through, but I'm probably going to help this person out once I hear their voice that it is indeed them. So I'll work on that now. But that's interesting. Got to be careful nowadays. You can't really assume a phone number is what it is. Can't assume an email certainly is what it is. Can't assume even in some cases a voice. But I'm going to have this person tell me some things in the voice memo that only the two of us would know, which I think is a good rule of thumb for everybody, by the way. A good rule of thumb for everybody. All right. It is time now for us to award this week's Listener of the Week. If you're new to the program, this is basically our way of thanking a listener that goes above and beyond during the course of the week to, it's our way of giving a little something back. You don't really get anything as Listener of the Week, except for the distinction of having that title for a week, and for you get the opportunity to pick the bumper music for the show for the following day, at least a portion of it. So the criteria, by the way, as most of you know, in getting selected as the listener of the week are frequency of listening, on-air calls and contributions, quality of written correspondence, on-topic social media participation, insight, topic suggestions, or assisting with guests, evangelism about the program, meaning getting other people to listen, getting other stations to carry the show, trying to get people to advertise, supporting me or any of my endeavors, subscribing to the podcast, longevity. If, for instance, if you're an enthusiastic listener, but you started listening yesterday, are we going to view you the same way as somebody that's been listening to me every minute of every show that we've ever done? No. And 10, the kind of wild card there, being nice, that counts for a lot. Well, the gentleman that is this week's listener of the week has been listening to us from the very beginning and fits, I'd say, 8 out of 10 of those criteria. Very supportive of everything that we do. I've met him many times in person. A wonderful guy, incredibly nice, very generous, has called into the show many times. And I am very pleased to announce this week's listener of the week as Hank Purpura. Hank Purpura, congratulations. It's extra special for Hank Purpura because a few days ago, he came home from 3 months in the hospital and 3+ weeks in therapy. And he's still in a wheelchair and has a walker, but he's doing great. And he actually had come home February 23rd, but he got sick again and had to be readmitted to the hospital with an infection that caused a little bit more weakness in his legs. And now he's back at it, and out of rehab, out of the hospital. He's home and he's doing well, walking with a walker. And they're working on having him be able to use the steps. So hopefully, as he is recovering, this will lead to this radio show will continue to lift his spirits, because Hank, honestly, you have done a great deal to lift our spirits. He's come to my New Year's Eve party several times, and he has been all about being helpful to everybody. So he's a great guy, and I am very happy to see him get this nomination of Listener of the Week. Hank, if you email me, I will be happy to get your bumper music selections that we can play tomorrow. So that's that. All right. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. Matt Blaze is out today because a friend of his and a former coworker of his passed away. There's somebody that he was very close to. I don't know if this has been announced yet, so it's certainly not my place to announce it. I met this fellow once, briefly at Talkers, I think 2 years ago, but I didn't really know him, but Matt certainly did, and he was very, very close to him. So wishing the best of luck to Matt. I think he's actually going to be out for the rest of the week because of the services and everything involving this fella. So best of luck to, and again, I will say this person's name once I'm told that this is okay, but it's not for me to announce people's death before, you know, before the family says anything. So I don't know if the family said anything, so I'll hold off. But condolences to Matt, because I know he was pretty close to this fella. So in the Matt chair today, doing double duty, mostly adequately, screwed up one thing 35 minutes ago, but it's okay. The day I do a perfect show is the day that I can expect everybody else to not make any mistakes, is Elias. Elias, congratulations on making it to Matt Blaze's chair.
Listen, Frank, I got another hour and a half to screw the rest of it up. So.
Yeah. Believe me, don't I know it. What did you screwed up our podcast yesterday, too? You had the first hour out of order?
I don't know. Those are unsubstantiated accusations, so we'll see.
But are we working on fixing yesterday's podcast?
Yeah. It should be fixed. It should be fixed by early this morning.
Oh, hopefully. I agree that it should be. Will it be? And is it? Are the two operative
questions. It is fixed, and it is now out of my hands.
Very good. Okay. Well, thank you. Appreciate you pitching in, and appreciate Bill Lee coming in to do Elias's normal duties, at least a portion of them. Look, I know these hours are very challenging. They're very challenging even if you do it every day, like Tony and Matt and I do, and Elias. But if you're called in last minute to do it and it's totally disruptive to your schedule, it's extra challenging. So my thanks to Bill Lee for pitching in. Hey, we spent a lot of time, more time than some of you would like, on Monday talking about the WrestleMania event that took place over the weekend. Well, it turns out maybe the Frankster is not speaking to as much of a fringe audience as some of you think. Those that tuned in to WrestleMania 40, as you heard John Arezzi reference when I interviewed him the other day, already knew that it was one of the best presentations of WrestleMania ever. Well, now there is factual proof. As the WWE announced, viewership was up 41% across both nights versus last year's record-setting audience. WrestleMania 40 became the most socially viewed of all time, with over 660 million views consumed over 2 days. Meantime, WWE's YouTube channel saw its most viewed day in channel history on Sunday, with more than 67 million views in 24 hours. The company said the total two-day attendance, this is the people that attended in person, was 145,298 people. And they said the gate was, for WrestleMania, was up 78%. So this is the most viewed WWE event in history and the most viewed WrestleMania in 40 years. Now, it's no doubt that viewership, I'm sure, had been helped by the return of The Rock, as well as the year-long story of whether or not this would be the year that Cody Rhodes would, quote, finish his story, and he certainly did. So, is it any wonder that we do so well ratings-wise? Because we're talking about things that people are actually watching, not 5 hours of Biden sucks. All right, 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Also wanted to mention, a follow-up to a story that we had talked about a couple of weeks ago, or maybe even last week. I don't know. The days sort of blend in with one another. Do you remember the story that we had done about Angie Harmon's dog? And how this dog was shot. And I think that this was a very sad story. Basically, an Instacart driver, someone that was delivering groceries, said that the dog was threatening him and he felt afraid for his life and he shot the dog to death. Angie Harmon went off on this, and a lot of people asked, I think including me, how come there was no arrest? So there are new details being revealed about the death of Angie Harmon's dog after this delivery man shot and killed the animal last week. The Charlotte Police Department told TMZ on Friday that they are standing by their decision. So much like that Tom Petty song, they are not backing down. They are standing by their decision to not press charges against the shopper who fatally wounded Harmon's German Shepherd Beagle Mix over Easter weekend. The delivery driver, the delivery man told authorities he had bite marks from the dog. Police, however, won't confirm if they saw lacerations. So instead, they are saying that, they're saying they didn't have enough evidence to charge the shopper. So there you have it. I said at the time, maybe there's more to it. If the guy was actually bitten by the dog, I still don't know that that justifies shooting the dog to death. But I think it does provide a little bit more context as to why the Charlotte Police Department ended up not charging this man. So there's that. That's the latest on the Angie Harmon situation. 800-848-9222. We will continue with your calls and more straight ahead.
Other Side of Midnight. It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Until the top of the hour. This is, of course, Rihanna. In honor of Michael Strasberg, this is one of the songs that that Donald Trump was asked not to play at campaign rallies. Happy birthday, Michael Strasberg. And in a great song. Absolutely. Rihanna is terrific. So, I didn't get to talk about this yesterday because Noam and I got to chatting. And, you know, when Noam and I get together, forget about it. There's no stopping us. Not yesterday, but the previous day, I saw the final episode ever of Curb Your Enthusiasm. I saw the finale of this series. Now, I have very much enjoyed this series over the course of the last 24 years. I think that's when it debuted, around the year 2000. I've watched it pretty much from the very beginning. No, actually, maybe I picked it up in season 2 or 3. By the way, I want to give a shout out to my friend Francesca, who is also celebrating her birthday today. She's listening to hear some of her music, and so far we haven't played any, but at least she's enjoying the show so far. So that's nice. That's a nice birthday present. Happy birthday, Francesca. We're working on it. We got a lot of birthdays to service. In any event, I think I picked it up maybe in season 2 or 3, but I quickly went back, and you know what it is? I was saying the same thing in the year 2000 or 2001, whenever it started, that I say now, which is I'm too busy and I'm not ready to take on another TV show at this point in my life. And ultimately, I was persuaded by my friends, the Simonettis, those crazy Simonetti brothers. They persuaded me that, look, it's only a half hour and it's terrific. It's the best thing you're ever going to see. And the seasons are relatively short. And I went back and I saw the first 2 seasons, loved them. And I've been hooked for the last maybe 22 years. I absolutely loved this series finale. I think this is one of the best series finales I've ever seen of any show. Certainly any comedy. I'm putting in the top 10. And, you know, one, I'm not going to spoil anything about this because there are so many layers. There are so many surprises. There are so many callbacks to earlier instances of Curb Your Enthusiasm history and earlier aspects of Seinfeld history, which obviously Larry was the co-creator of along with Jerry Seinfeld. But the one thing I'll mention, and it doesn't give anything away, is there's always been a lot of criticism of the Seinfeld finale. And Larry David came back to write the Seinfeld finale. He had left the show, I think, a 2 years earlier to do movies, and I think just because he needed a break. And he said he came back for the finale, and that's always been a polarizing finale, kind of like The Sopranos. But I loved the finale at the time. I thought it was terrific, and I still think it's terrific. So basically, someone says at some point in the show to Larry, this is what we should have done for the Seinfeld finale. And I think that thinking is right. I think this finale, and I enjoyed the Seinfeld finale, was even better than the Seinfeld finale. Same kind of a style, but I think vastly superior and vastly funnier and much more unexpected. You think you're going one way, you think you're zigging, and then you zag. Enough callbacks, enough homages to previous Curb history, but not so many that it just becomes a clip show. Some great cameos, some wonderful just comedic writing. I thought it was a gem and not a disappointment at all. And this was absolutely Curb Your Enthusiasm going out on a high note. And there were things in there that would be very, very good in just an any Curb Your Enthusiasm episode. For instance, is it inappropriate to tell someone that someone else doesn't like Mexican food? Or is that private? That's an issue that's explored. And I just loved it. I thought it was absolutely terrific and very much in keeping with what has made this show so great. So I know a lot of people probably haven't seen it. And in the era that we're living in, a lot of people tape them, or I guess nobody has VCRs anymore. They TiVo them and they watch it later. Or you, if you have HBO on demand, you can watch it on demand. I thought it was wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. And I can't recommend it highly enough if you're a fan of the show. But, and Francesca, whose birthday it is today, also loves Curb Your Enthusiasm. So hopefully that was a big part of her birthday festivities, is celebrating, you know, with a little Larry David humor. So that's that. But I would recommend that you watch the whole season. Don't just, because I'm saying nice things about the finale, don't just go and watch the finale. You have to really enjoy it holistically to understand how we got to this point. And as I've said before with this show, it's just so refreshing that in an era of people being terrified to offend people, that they're not terrified to offend anybody. All of the things that I mentioned about Curb a couple of days ago, about how they make, you know, they poked fun at Jesus, poked fun at the Holocaust, poked fun at race, poked fun at gender, poked fun at Judaism. They did the same thing again. They reminded everybody, hey, if you think our show has reformed or we're not going to be offensive anymore, we're going to remind you of all the things that we've done to offend people over the last 24 years. I thought it was great. I thought it was really well done. Did either of you guys see it, Tony or Elias?
No, I haven't watched it. I'm not really. I watched Curb Your Enthusiasm years ago, but
you're
I
not into it.
I'm caught up on it.
Not into it. What about you, Elias?
I've seen quite a few episodes of Curb. I think I'm going to start watching it from the beginning.
So, there you go.
I think that's, I'm excited to see the end in a couple of years.
You know,
probably.
There's always a debate, and my wife loved the episode too, but there's always a debate, and this debate has gone on for 24 years. What's better, Seinfeld or Curb Your Enthusiasm? And I think it's an impossible question to answer, because while there are a lot of similarities, there are so many differences. One is that Seinfeld was on network television. They can't use profanity. On Curb, so many of the most entertaining, most humorous moments involve cursing. And the way that they use profanity is brilliant. So I think it's such an unfair advantage that they have. Curb also doesn't have these commercial breaks, so you don't have to build to a crescendo or a cliffhanger or, you know, a key plot point right before the commercial break. That's an advantage for Curb. But Seinfeld, you know, we all stand on the shoulders of those who came before us, and there would have been no Curb but for the ground that was broken by Seinfeld. When they wanted to do an episode on Seinfeld about masturbation, that was incredibly controversial, and the only way they were able to get away with it was not mentioning the word masturbate. And not a single sponsor dropped, and it, a lot of people say that's their favorite episode of the series. In fact, on Curb, Shaquille O'Neal said that's his favorite episode, the contest. And that would have been unthinkable pre-Seinfeld. So just like Seinfeld benefited from Cheers, just like Cheers benefited from Taxi, just like Taxi benefited from All in the Family, just like All in the Family benefited from I Love Lucy, we all stand on the shoulders of people that came before us. So it's like saying, you know, who's a better, you know, who's a better wrestler, right? The Rock or Lou Thesz, right? It's unfair. You can't compare players in baseball from different eras because things develop, right? And so I hate answering the question, but when there's a gun to my head and I do have to answer the question, I say I think Curb is funnier the first time you watch it, but I think Seinfeld is funnier upon repeat viewing. That's kind of my my view. All right. 800-848-9222. There was a lot of biblical references on on Curb as well. So those of you that appreciate the biblical story of Rachel and the rug merchants will certainly enjoy this season of Curb Your Enthusiasm. One open line if you want to jump on board. Let me begin with Max in Las Vegas, listening on KDON. Hello, Max.
Superstar. What nationality is the name Popora?
It's Italian.
I've never heard that one. That's a unique name. Okay, moving in. You were right. I agree 100%. The first time I watched and gave Seinfeld a couple shots when it first came out, I go, this is it. But once you got into the characters, and again, the last episode, I had to watch the last episode two or three times before I got it. And I said, no, it really was a good last episode. I just didn't appreciate it when I first saw it.
A lot of people said that, right? My friend Vinny Greco, I remember even back 20 years ago, he was watching a lot of Seinfeld reruns, and Vinny Greco said, you know, I didn't like that last episode of Seinfeld when it aired, but after time, I liked it. I did like it when it first aired, but I have continued to like it since then. But a lot of people are in the same boat you're in. What about, Max, the question that I just posed, which is better, Seinfeld or Curb? Can you answer that?
I was never, I never watched Curb Your Appetite.
Max, because not everyone that likes Seinfeld is going to like Curb, just because the character of Larry David on that show, which I think is pretty true to life based on everything that I've heard, is so curmudgeonly. And if you have a problem with curmudgeonly characters, you won't find him likable enough to, to enjoy. But what I would say, go ahead.
Superstar, you're getting my voice because I am King Curmudgeon. Please continue.
Well, so then maybe you might like him. But anyway, if you're just a Seinfeld fan, what I recommend is just watch season 7. Because season 7 of Curb is designed just for Seinfeld fans. That if you're only a Seinfeld fan, that season 7 is really like a continuation of Seinfeld.
Do you have time for the 2 points of my original call?
If you can do it in a minute, sure.
Oh, easily. Going 8 years of perfect attendance Sunday school, they taught me it was a master's degree CPA who went on to become a rabbi. He goes, Frank, it's not thou shalt not kill. It's thou shalt not murder. And on your parents, it's not thou shalt honor thy parents. It's thou shalt consider your mother and father. Big differences there. Yeah. And real quickly, you know, he told me, Frank, there's actually 610 commandments. And, you know, one of the first is be fruitful and multiply. And the other one I've fallen into because I didn't want to make a baby. I'm going to leave you with this. Woe to the man who falls alone. Take care. Keep knocking it out of the park, baby.
Thank you, Max. Appreciate that. Yeah, I'm aware that it's actually, I think, 613 commandments. And whenever I meet someone that's an Orthodox Jew, especially an Orthodox Jewish rabbi, they always point that out, 613 commandments. You know, I realized I had forgotten I violated my own rule of chivalry by going ladies first in terms of callers. Tricia is in Connecticut. Hi, Tricia.
Hi, Frank.
Hi.
About your earlier comments about the difference between the God of the Old and the New Testament. I belong to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and we believe that Jesus was the creator of the earth, sent down by God the Father, along with Michael, who became Adam, to create the earth. But the difference in character comes from the law of the Old Testament is the law of carnal commandments, the Ten Commandments. So, because the people were disobedient, the law of justice came out more in the Old Testament and the law of love in the New Testament. So I had that comment. And I also had a question for you. Have you watched The Chosen with Jonathan Rumi starring in the role of Jesus, which I
not yet, but I'm told it's great, and I'm looking forward to seeing it.
It is. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to checking out. Tricia, thank you for the education on the Mormon church there and your edification on that. Appreciate that. Thank you. 800-848-9222. I have heard The Chosen is great. I've heard nothing but great things about it. So I will make an effort to check that out. All right. A lot more to get to, and we're going to get to it. Believe you me, you want to find us on Facebook? You can do so, facebook.com/MoranoFan. I have 5 days of StreamYard for free. So for the next 4 days, I'm going to make a lot of videos on Facebook. I'll probably make one this afternoon. Check it out. And we're also on Twitter, @FrankMorano. Meantime, your influence counts. Use it.